Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of Own Your Awkward. I am so super excited today. I have one of the people making things happen here in the Northwest, my new friend, my local incubator person, Zhang Nguyen, is the person who is helping small businesses make life happen with Bullion Factory. Zhang, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I am excellent. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It's going to be fun.
It is going to be great. So, you know, I like to start out just kind of getting perspective from everybody, and there's so much going on in the world. I'd like to hear, what's the most positive thing you see out there right now?
There's so many things happen. Yeah, that's true. One positive thing I've seen so far is, let me scan through my head, because when I get put on the spot, I'm start going to loading mode. So I like to speak like personally, because at home, I think that's the front line. Mm-hmm. So my little niece has recently start writing. So now he's learning how to write his alphabet.
Okay.
He's good at speaking, he's so good at reading, but he doesn't write. And he's 4, and he's writing words now. So that's exciting. Out there in the world, I like seeing all the charity finally get their recognition. And I finally so happy that we can have in-person event again. It feels yes. Like being let out of jail after COVID. So those are the things that I've seen that's happening that makes me really happy.
You know, I love that analogy of feeling like you're getting let out of jail, because, you know, sometimes you're watching a movie or you're hearing someone's story and you wonder, what would you do in this situation? And it makes me think, okay, well, if I'd been in jail for years, what would be the first thing I would go do, or the first meal I would want to eat, or those kind of things? So now I have to ask, what was the first thing you wanted to do when you could go out again?
Oh, I wanted to go to concert. I wanted to go to concert, number one. I wanted to see people perform. I like that we're being safe and wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
But I just find it so much more comfortable to walk around the city and go into a coffee shop not wearing masks.
Sure.
Again. And I like that I can finally go meet people and shake people's hand.
Yeah.
Without thinking about death all the time.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when you see the mask, you know, and there are reasons people need to wear it just to be careful or whatever, but when you see it, it's a reminder that there's this thing out there. There's a scary thing. So even if you're not thinking about it, or you're not scared or fearful in the moment, it's like, oh, that's right. We were, you know, 2 steps away from that situation that just was going on and is still lingering out there in a lot of places.
Yeah. And even during COVID, because I was working during COVID, and the air itself feels heavy because you're constantly being reminded about COVID. So when you walk into a room, you really want to distance from people, and you're hearing news about how it spread in the air. So it just feels like you're confined, not just in your space, but like in the air you breathe, the people you meet, the space you're surrounded in. So finally, it's over. So I'm so excited to finally go back to where we were before.
Right. Yes. It feels so good. Well, Zhang, everyone is here because they want to know about your awkward. So I got to ask you, what's that awkward thing? And in full disclosure, you told me, and I'm going to share with the world, this is your first podcast. So this is amazing. I'm excited to have you. It feels very special when someone says that it's their first podcast and that it's with me, because I love helping people have new experiences. So with that said, what is that thing that that awkwardness you've had to own in order to do all these amazing things you're doing in the world?
My awkwardness is that I am intensely and desperately introverted.
Oh, okay. Intensely. Wow. Okay. So how has that felt as you've, it's funny because that is such a
Oh, I
contradiction to you
stunted
being
you.
excited to go back out into the world.
Yes, so it's a weird dichotomy because a lot of people would think that if you're introverted, you'd be celebrating staying in your house.
Sure.
But it's mostly, so the first thing is that it's hard to talk about yourself. And
Sure.
I find that in most careers, you have to talk about yourself and you talk about yourself really well. But with me, I find it hard to wrap my head around myself. Writing my own biography and resume was one of the hardest challenge I faced this week. And it's easier to talk about things that is outside of yourself. So talk about work, world news, other people, nature, your surrounding. But when I reflect on me people and saying my name or telling people who I am, it's really hard for me because it feels like I am on display a little bit.
Sure.
But I kind of find a way to navigate through that a little bit as I grow up. It was worse about 5 years ago. So that's what's going on with me.
Okay. Well, and it's interesting to hear you say that, given that when I have met you and when every time I see you, we are at local networking events and we're in public shaking hands and saying hi to people. And it's a very non-introverted thing to be doing.
Correct. I find that most of people who are like me tends to know how to mask themselves.
Okay.
Because so how I hype myself up for those events, if I'm terrified to death, talk to strangers, is to think of it, this is work. Okay, you're no longer you. Jane is no longer occupying this nerdy, uncoordinated body. You're in there to work and you're in there to talk about yourself. So work is now possessing you. That's how I kind of distance it from myself.
Okay.
But as I get older, I think it's more beneficial to somewhat maybe shine a tiny, tiny light onto who Jen is.
Right.
With that being said, it's harder
No,
to
that's
do than
fair.
said.
I like the idea that you have a method to step into the situation because if it's something that you might want what's on the other side, or you might need what's on the other side of that door because of your profession, then we have to kind of play tricks on our minds to help our mind get through that door.
Correct.
But I interesting that you use the word possess. You
So here's the little shine the light that I was talking about. I am a very big fan of true crime.
Okay.
So I think I've been reading a lot of creepy materials over the weekends lately. That's probably why I chose that word.
That's funny. Do you know, was there a point where you first realized you were going to use that trick or where you figured that out? Was there a moment or an event that spurred that where you said, this is how I have to make this work for me?
I think, I mean, if we are going to take it back all the way, I think it was around middle school.
Okay.
Because Middle school was an interesting time for me. That's when I moved to the United States. So I kind of got dropped in this very diverse middle school with not a single lick of English.
Oh, wow.
So in a lot of ways, it's kind of make me more shy, but also more introverted. And I'll tell you what, it's really interesting because when you're in a space when you cannot communicate verbally, the only thing you can do is be physical.
Oh, yeah.
So I learned that trick that we're talking about in middle school because when I'm in there, I constantly remind myself that, hey, you can't understand what they're saying, and they can't understand what you're saying. But maybe you can shake their hand and be physical and just show up. That's how you're gonna make friends.
Okay.
Just hang
Yeah.
around. That's how you're gonna make friends. And that's exactly what happened. I just start hanging around people, you know, some people would wave at me and I would just go sit down next to them and smile.
Wow. That's a really I have this really beautiful image in my head of, you know, middle schoolers or children getting to know each other without even having to use words. That's amazing.
It does go with up and down because middle school kids are capable of bullying too.
Right. Well, yeah. As I was starting to say this image, I was picturing probably kids younger because middle school kids don't have that reputation of being welcoming, which is unfortunate because while you're there, not, you know, in a crowd that has a reputation for not being welcome, it's the time in our lives where we want the most, I think, to be welcomed.
With my experience, I feel is more along the line of, and I could be wrong, as I often do. I feel like it's comfort that's why they don't really welcome you people.
Okay.
And that's why I was hesitating to join anyone, even Vietnamese kids in the school, because it doesn't feel comfortable. It, frankly speaking, it doesn't feel comfortable to talk to people that you haven't known. Because if we think about it, these kids know each other from grade school or daycare,
Right.
and they continue on that. And so bringing someone new into our space is, I think, uncomfortable, even with adults. Adults, you know, you grow up, you make friends, you make a really good friend, close friend, and that's your circle for the next, I don't know how many years.
No, that's a good point. You develop your circle because of that comfort, and it is hard to step out of that. And I think that's why when we go through things like a breakup or even leaving a job or a career or relocating, it's such an uncomfortable feeling, and then that creates a lot of fear and discomfort, and sometimes it's hard to step out of those situations. And so to learn that lesson so young and to see it, that I imagine that, you know, maybe you didn't know how the value of that lesson at the time, but it seems like it has served you.
Yes, I take life experience very seriously, because my parents is full of them. My parents are full of them. My mom always say I'm an accident gold nugget
Okay.
because my parents had me really late. So while most of my peers, their parents are, you know, they're middle age. My parents are in the 70s and 80s.
Okay.
So I have to grow up a lot faster than my peers in a lot of way. And you know, with having older parents as well, you kind of feel isolated, but at the same time you feel at ease because they already push you on the wisdom end so much that you kind of have their life experience as a springboard. That's why I take the life experience so seriously.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the snapshot of our peers and realize that we're all coming from a different background at home. Even if things on the surface could look the same, we could live in the same community, go to the same school, but our home lives are all going to be very different. And even siblings, you know, you could have siblings who experienced having younger parents, and then you experience having older parents, just depending on where you are in the birth order. It really can vary. That's where sometimes you look at people and think, were we raised in the same house?
If condition gave, and then I think a lot of people, I mean, that's so special when you find that person that has almost the same condition as you. My best friend, we're going on 15 years, 15, 16 years now. So yeah, it's just really special when you find someone who is the same condition as you. Like you say, it feels like meeting a long lost siblings that you didn't know you had.
When you have that chemistry and connection, you have it right away and you can't even explain it. So that leads me to my next question. When you've started to use these tools and there you are possessed on the playground or stepping into the room, how have people reacted to you using that skill? Or have you had people who know you in a more introverted way and then see you in that other way and say, which Jiang is this?
Well, that's a question for you. Because how do you feel when that first shake your head, you know?
I definitely remember when I first met you, and I felt like you did seem a little quiet, like it was a little more hesitant to talk to you. But I'm also very shy in those events. I'm extroverted but shy, so I'm always kind of like, and you weren't shy at all about coming up. It was like, there you were. Here's my thing, but you were very confident. There was no question of, here I am. And you would even point out things of like, huh, I talked to that person already and we're having this same conversation. Like there was no shyness in you about that space and that event. And I wouldn't have guessed that it would take you that many steps to get into the door, that you had to like think through that to say, I'm going to go into this mind space to get here. It just felt like you should be there. And it's interesting because now I'm like, I didn't know you before you walked through that door. So I'm seeing it in the reverse. Like I see the confident you and the here I am possessed in the room, here with a purpose. And you presented very well as talking about the William Factory and what you guys do. I didn't at all get the impression that, oh, this is somebody new that doesn't know what's going on here or how to represent their business. So.
Yeah, it's that's why it's important to have a purpose, because that's where the confidence is from, right? But by that time, you know, when you hype yourselves up so much and then you get tired of it and you just go in with a mindset of just do this thing, because that's a lot of time what happens is I would try to overload myself with thinking about how I'm gonna appear. Am I gonna be confident? What if I trip over my word? I focus so much on the micro details that I get tired of it, and then that's when I step in, because then it's just complete blank here. So completely present. My friend though would say the opposite thing about you because they've known me for so long that they say, oh, she's the most outgoing person in the world. She's so loud and wild. And when we go to karaoke, she would scream until her voice go husk. That's what my friend would say. And correct. But if you put us as a group in like a network event, none of us would be talking if we didn't know about it beforehand.
That's fair. You said something there that I hadn't heard described this way, and so I really want to highlight this. You mentioned, and maybe I'm naive for not thinking about it in this light, and it's common knowledge, but you said confidence comes from having a purpose, and that you have to have a purpose, and that that brings confidence. And I think that that is such a beautiful way to look at it, because we talk about our whatever our higher thing is that we're interested in order to give us that purpose and that drive. But I hadn't really pictured that as giving you confidence. So I'd like to hear more about what you think around that.
Right. So it's kind of funny you say that. There are people who can have confidence of whatever they do. There are people that are just natural born public speakers, who are incredibly charming. I'm not that. I have to know what I'm talking about. And I think a lot of time, it to me, whatever you do, or however you act, or whoever you speak to, or however you speak, that is all frosting on the cake. What the cake is your message. What is essentially you trying to do? And the question is, why are you doing this? So the purpose to me comes from when I ask myself, okay, why are you going to this networking event talking with to this guy that has a mustache?
Right.
And that comes from the purpose of, and then that answered the question, oh, it's because I want to speak to people. Okay, but why do you want to speak to people? Because I want to talk and I want to see people and I want to connect. Okay, then you go do that. And that
Yeah.
became a purpose to me. I don't know if it's the same process for everyone else. I think other people would have a very short chart map of what how they perform, but I have to think of it in a systematic way, before I execute anything and then find my purpose.
I love
Conversation is
that.
starting to sound very new age.
Well, no, but I think it's important to dial that back all the way. And I love that you walked us through the questions the way that you think through it, because a lot of times, when you show up and you're like, well, I have to do this because of this result. But if that result, if you can't make the connection of why you want that result, then that result still doesn't give you the purpose or the confidence. You have to actually understand, well, no, I want to be this type of person, or I want to be, getting to know people in this space. And I can't do that if I don't do this. And I can't do that if I don't do this. So that kind of helps you jump over all of those hurdles in order to step into that room.
And theater helps because I was in theater in high school.
Okay. How did you enjoy that? Did you like it? Was it a challenge?
Oh, it was a great time. My first show, I got a concussion, and my second show, I got a panic attack.
Oh no.
Great time in the theater.
But you speak fondly of it.
I did because it's one of the most memorable thing in my life. I can't visually remember it because I have to perform with my glasses. But
Okay.
it was the whole preparations and I think it really does help too with confidence boosting because the director didn't care whether or not you're shy. They care whether or not you get you on that stage.
Oh, yeah.
So the panic attack I talked to you earlier. I was already in the wings of the theater entering. We were doing Animal Farm.
Okay.
So I was like, oh my God, we have like 300 people in the audience and they're gonna see me and blah, blah, blah. And there's literally a spotlight, physically a spotlight on me at the
Right.
time. So to me, that was like a death sentence because I can talk to one person or five person, but like, sing in front of 300 people is something else. So I was just so overcome with fear. And then my coworker pushed me on the shoulder because I'm a cute to go. And at the all that point, I say, okay, I can't afford to think about this. So that blindness I told you about, come
Yeah.
back. And then I just jump out the wings and start singing. And then after that, I realized, huh. I didn't die. this is gonna be okay.
But I'm still here after all of that fear and anxiety and whatever was going through your head.
And that's the approach I take to the rest of anything that I do. So, there's still, I mean, you can tell physical aspect of it because I still stumble around my words every now and then. But more, but for some time though, that has been working out okay.
Well, and also that makes people have to listen a little bit closer and be more intently in paying attention. If they have to concentrate and think about what you're saying, like sometimes I go in big circles around what I'm saying and I use way too many words and it's ridiculous. However, if they're having to do a little equation to put together whatever it was I just said, that can bring people in to have to kind of understand it. See, even now I can't even say the clear point without going in circles. I think we all stumble on our words. Sometimes we notice it the most with ourselves.
It, did you find that people responds to you a little bit better when you're direct and concise?
That's a great question because I think it depends on the person, how they take information in. There are some people that I know if I tell the story before I give them the request or the information that I'm trying to relay, that frustrates them because they just want to know, how much, like if I'm trying to say how much something costs, I'm want to buy this thing and I want to know if you're on board to help me buy it for $50. Well, if I say to you, it's $50, should we buy this or not? If you're a very direct person, that might be enough. If you're someone who needs a story, you might need to know, well, why is this one worth $50? And did you look at all the other things? And is this really the best choice? And how much research did you do? And how many stores did you see it at? And do we really even need the thing? And so I found that there are people who sometimes need all the words, and sometimes all the words make it more frustrating for them. One thing I've tried to do when I'm writing, like an email or a text message, even certain friends I know, or even people that I work with, certain people I know, they just want the three or four words. So I try to keep it to that. Other people I've come to understand, if I just give them the three or four words, then they're offended by that because they think I'm being harsh. So I try to be a little bit aware of both. But we can't always do that with everybody because we don't know everybody. So I try to just make sure that I'm giving a little bit of information without overloading them and then still being somewhat direct. But that's, I overthink things also. So there's that.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, in outside, the three or four words would be me, but then when I get back home and sit down, and then the whole charade would also be me. I think I don't know if this is true, but this is my experience with someone who's introverted. I tend to internalize a lot of dialogues, and it's a bad habit that I started picking things apart. So if I had a conversation with you, and I promise you I'll do this after the podcast ends, I'll go back and I would start replaying the whole podcast in my head, and I would start thinking, why did I say that? Why did I say that? I can't say anything else different. I should have claimed to meet the Queen of England or something, make myself more interesting. It's a bad habit, and I find that it's hard for me to let the feeling go.
And I think that I think there are things that we label bad or good as far as habits go. And I find that if we have these recurring things that we're doing, if we can find a way to turn it into a lesson for later, Like if I'm replaying the conversation because I want to position myself a certain way, or I want to communicate a certain way, or share a certain message to the world, if I'm replaying that conversation to find out how I need to shift my dialogue for future, it's not so bad to do that. If I'm doing it because I'm beating up on myself and saying, "Oh, why would you do that? You've never met the Queen of England. What are you thinking?" Then that might not be the most positive, feelings we're putting on ourselves. So if you know you're going to have that replay, maybe just before you start doing it, say, "Okay, well, as I go into this headspace, what's the one lesson I'm going to try to take out of it for the next podcast I'm on or the next dialogue I'm in?" And then it's more of a mission that you're searching for something instead of just adding to the list of things that you might want to beat yourself up about.
Oh wow, that's really interesting. Yes, I'll try that technique. Not
Like I'm just thinking, because if you know it's going to happen, like I used to think, oh, I need to read this self-help book and change this habit about myself and change that habit about myself. But I've learned that there are certain things instinctively that we've spent however many years of our lives developing and having these conversations in our head. We're not going to be able to just flip that over and change. But if I can change how I use the conversation, I know that it's automatically still going to happen. So now I'm kind of tricking it into saying, well, it's a little manipulative on my part with my brain, but it's saying I'm now going to use this self-talk that I'm having for the purpose and the good that I want it to be.
I think the word manipulation got a really bad rep over the year.
Yes, it did, definitely.
But I mean, you have to manipulate your brain, even on a small level, don't you?
You
Because
do.
if I don't manipulate my brain, then I would just sit in my home playing video games all day because my brain would be telling me that this is something you enjoy.
Right, yeah.
So you have to manipulate your brain to doing things that is uncomfortable. Go and talk to Andy. Get on a podcast,
Right. Well,
even though you're awkward.
the thing is, this is the one thing that I always comes down to when I'm working with coaching clients is that if you want to change your life and change what you're doing and change the way you live, it starts by changing the way you think. And you can't change the way you think without manipulating your thoughts or your brain and saying, this is where I want you to go. You're here, but I want to go there. And if we can't do that, then that it can be for a good thing.
Have you have any client that was hard to scratch?
Yes, I do, and especially early on, I found that that sometimes when I first started coaching, I didn't always do the best job at having conversations up front to find out where they were at, to know if they were really ready for getting to the next step. And now I end up turning more people away than I take on because it's more of a, well, in order for me to help you get here, we have to at least be in this space. And I'm happy to have conversations to help you get to that space. But if we're going to sit down for 3 months, excuse me, for 3 months and really try to make change happen, we have to know enough about you. You have to understand yourself enough to get there. But I think the thing that's been the toughest when I've had someone who's been hard to turn has been when people, it's always come down to people who aren't really sure what they want. And they think they know what they want, which I can really relate to because I have had years of not knowing what I want. And just the other day, I was like, if you don't know what you want, stop shopping. Like it's that simple. Just stop trying to buy things and bring them into your life or, going out looking for all these things that things or people or careers, if you don't really know what you want, because you're going to fill up your basket with all this stuff. And then it creates all this frustration because now you've got the things, and so you feel like you should be happy. Now you're beating yourself up over the fact that you're ungrateful for the things that you have, but they weren't really even the things you wanted. So it comes down to really helping people when I get in that space, having to actually say to them, well, is this really even what you want? Where you came to me saying that this is you want thing A or lifestyle in showcase one, and yet all of the things that we are doing, you're struggling with, and the underlying issue seems to be that it's because you don't really want that bad. And it comes back to what you said about having that purpose. If you don't have a purpose to get to that place, then we have to look at why not. And is it because you feel like you should want that because of society or how you were raised or people around you, but it's not really what you want? And maybe we need to do the work around unpacking that so you can say, well, let's go. If you really want to be a wood carver in the woods, in the mountain and have a lodge, but everyone is telling you that you need to be an executive of a business, well, let's figure out how to make the other thing work for you if that's really what your passion is, and stop trying to please everybody.
That's so interesting that you mentioned that you need to know what you want. Because because a lot of my peers are also going over that. Is this what I want? Why do I want it? And that internal dialogues, that self-reflection lasted for years,
Yes.
years. I was in the same way. So and I was like, this is a loop. I find like
Sure.
when I ask myself what I want, it feels like a loop because it's a problem of asking what do I want? And then I would find something and say, okay, now I want that. And then I ask myself, why do I want that? And then I reproach. I say, well, maybe I don't. So then what do I want? I keep going and keep going and keep going
Yeah.
and keep going.
I had one client who was having that frustration with themselves about always, they felt like they were always giving up on things because they would pursue one thing and, buy the tools to start the hobby and pursue it a little bit and then kind of not be excited about it anymore and then pursue something else and take the class on how to do glass blowing and then kind of not do that, enjoy that anymore, and then go hiking a little bit. And I remember just stopping him and saying, well, what's wrong with you just being an adventurer? What's wrong with you having a life where you want to explore as many different things as possible? And the fact that you don't do any one of them for the rest of your life isn't the problem. It's that, wow, I met this person who's done 1,000 different things. And every time I talk to him, it's like, oh yeah, I learned how to do this, or I did that for 6 months, or I traveled here or there. And that sometimes we struggle with the thinking we need to have a thing. And sometimes it's just, no, we're having lots of experiences, and that can be a very cool situation.
That really speaks to me because I grew up, I don't want to say artistic family background because it was just on my dad's side, but my dad was a calligrapher.
Oh, wow.
So he masters old Gothic text. So he would write scripts and whatnot in old Gothic text. And I thought when I grew up, because I also kind of in that creativity space, I thought, okay, well, maybe I should become a master of calligraphy. Didn't happen. My personal handwriting wasn't any better. So I say, clearly, I am not good at this. So I started painting. And I wasn't happy with painting either. And so I started drawing and then started digital art and graphic design. And it just keep evolving and evolving. And then I start crocheting. And it's like, I don't know if I want to crochet anymore. And I started knitting. So
Right.
I'm like starting hoarding hobbies.
A hobby hoarder, I love it.
Because I only want to pursue that one thing. Because in my mind, how cool is that to be called a master of something?
Right.
But the
And
best I got so far is just a jack of some things.
right. Yeah, just a little bit of everything. And but along the way, look at all those things that are in, your quilt of life that have all been part of your experiences that you wouldn't have ever touched.
Yes, and I also find, like you say, think of the people that entangle themselves within those activities.
Right.
Because my grandmother taught me how to sew, and And my teachers taught me how to crochet. So those little memories, it makes everything a little bit more meaningful.
Yeah, definitely. So, Jang, before we go, I've got two more things to ask you about. And one is, how can people support what you're doing out there in the world? I'd love to hear just a little bit about what you're doing with the small businesses to help them get started and local entrepreneurs.
Yes, so the William Factory, this is my workplace.
Right.
William
Switching gears,
Factory.
yes.
Yeah, I'm putting it into full, like, I don't know how to do manual, so I'm just gonna put it in full drive.
There you go.
So I am currently now with the William Factory Small Business Incubator. It's a business incubator that is about 40 years old in the city of Tacoma, so a lot of history. And right now we're putting together classes, courses, partnerships to help small business understand financial literacy and how to do online digital marketing. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. So that is in the work. How you can support us is either through donation to the foundation, or you can just attend our meeting or just have an, come and talk to me. I welcome one-on-one meeting. Not groups.
Perfect. That's fair, as we've discussed.
Yes. And also follow us on social media. That would be greatly helpful.
Perfect. And we have all the links for that here in the comments. So hopefully we'll continue to drive some support your way. You guys do so much good stuff for the community. For people who aren't here in Tacoma, just a little bit about Tacoma. It is a thriving small business town. It's one of the towns that's a city, but feels like a small community because everybody just seems to know each other and support each other. And I don't know if it's because of this, just because of the circle of people that I meet, but it seems like everybody in Tacoma is a small business owner or entrepreneur or pursuing some passion in one way or another. Between artists, musicians, small businesses, there's a lot of great things happening in this city. So,
Yes, I think too that it's because Tacoma is such a creative space. We have a lot of people who are not just, traditional artists, but also people who wants to make things. So it's a thriving community. It's gotten to the point that I don't even go to Walmart or whatever for soap anymore. I just buy soap that's handmade here in Tacoma.
Yeah, it really is the epitome of shop and support local. I mean, granted, we still have the Walmart, we still have big box stores, but more and more I see people supporting people just creating things right here in town and pulling them together and filling our shopping list with that.
Once somebody start figuring out how to make handmade toilet paper is over for
There you go. Well, that's a new project for somebody. And when you start that business, be sure to see the William Factory.
maybe I should hoard another hobby.
There you go. Paper making. Well, Zhang, before we go, what would be that last piece of advice you would give the world on how they can own their awkward?
So, from our conversation, my advice to anyone is just so cliche, but just do it.
We love that.
If you don't enjoy the process of doing something, then it's a lesson. If you do enjoy it, and it becomes a purpose.
That's beautiful. It can go, you basically have two boxes to check. It's either a lesson or it becomes a purpose.
Yeah. It's hard because a lot of people, they make a mistake and they think of it as a mistake instead of lesson. So that's my advice for people. You can always learn something new.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Jang. It's always a pleasure to see you. It was great to talk to you more today than we have in the past, just to get to know you. I'm looking forward to singing karaoke with you soon because I want to hear you belting it out. Now that I know that's a thing, next networking event, I'm going to bring a microphone and a
Please
jukebox.
don't.
I wouldn't do that to you,
I
but
would do it
it
to you, though.
Uh-oh. I yeah. That's when I go to the professional events, I put my karaoke voice away. We all have to step in with our own, what do
We
we
all have
say?
to get possessed.
Yes, possessed in a different way. But thank you so much for opening up today. It's been awesome. And for everybody else watching and listening, be sure that you click all the links in the description so that you can support Jang and the William Factory. And as always, own your awkward. Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.